Now, it's Central Time. America's faith in our government has gone down over the years, with people saying they don't trust it to do the right thing. And one culprit that gets the blame, money and campaign spending. Advocates for stricter campaign finance laws say they would go a long way in restoring that trust. But our next guests say that's not necessarily the case. They've done years' worth of surveys on how people feel about money in politics, and they find that even new rules on campaign spending aren't likely to get rid of dissatisfaction with our political system. It's time to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. What would make you have more faith in government than you do right now? How do you think about it when it comes to campaign finance? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. David Primo is a professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. He's co-author of the new book, Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters. Dave, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Jeff Milo is a professor and chair of the Department of Economics at the University of Missouri. He's also a co-author on that new book. Jeff, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Dave, politicians from both parties talk about money and corruption, and campaign finance reform is often framed as this way to restore people's trust in government. And you write that that conversation is pretty far afield from real data about what new laws could realistically do. Where do you see the gaps?
The challenge with campaign finance reform is, and its effects on trust in government, is that mistrust of government runs so much deeper than money. And if you ask the public to define what corruption is, they define corruption so broadly that acts that we would think of as normal politics, so trying to secure media coverage, essentially representing your constituents, if you frame it in the right way, the public will think that that is corrupt behavior, and they often ascribe malign motives to, especially to the other party, with regard to corruption. So the public's distrust and distaste for politics just runs so deep that campaign finance reform isn't going to move the needle much. And we find that both in recent surveys and over the last 30 years, looking at surveys that others have done.
Is campaign finance a little bit of a scapegoat for our lack of trust in our systems?
Money is, without a doubt, an easy target, right? It's easy to measure, right? We get reports, especially in election season like we're in now, about how much the candidates are spending. If you ask the public, they will say that money is corrupting. And as a result, it's a very easy sell for politicians to say that we need to do more to regulate money in politics. But the reality is that once you actually implement these laws, as we've shown at the state level, using state level data, if you look at changes in state campaign finance laws, they've had virtually no effect on how the public perceives government.
Jeff, the question you're looking at is not so much whether campaign finance laws are good or bad, but if they would achieve that stated goal. One of those is restoring public faith in government. So how do you investigate whether reforms actually do that?
Well, and that's a great observation to start with, too. So much of the public conversation about campaign finance laws is, sort of presumes their effects and then talks about whether they're good or bad. As social scientists, we really want to focus on what are the effects of these reforms in practice. And so we go about this in a number of different ways in the book, but the sort of what I think of as the crowning chapter, where we look at the effects of state campaign finance laws on trust in state government, we use the states as laboratories. And so over the last 30 years, there have been a lot of changes in state campaign finance laws. Wisconsin has public financing and has more regulations. Down here in Missouri, at least until very recently, it was kind of like the Wild West. Anyone could give any amount to state candidates. So there's a lot of variation across states and over time. And we exploit that variation to then say, when you see changes in these laws at the state level, do you see corresponding changes in trust in state government? And the answer is no.
No, because people still say they don't trust it roughly as much, or why? Do we know?
Well, whatever their baseline trust, there's no change. It's not responsive to changes in campaign finance laws. And there's a number of reasons that might be. One is probably a lot of people aren't aware of what the campaign finance laws in their state. So there's not going to really be a direct effect. But if you think that reform is going to transform politics in some dramatic way, that should be noticed. And you don't get that indirect effect either. And it's, you know, the way we summarize it is the reason campaign finance reforms don't work in practice the way reformers think they will, it's because the world doesn't work the way reformers think it does. Money is simply not the driving force in American politics that it is often taken for granted to be.
Jeff Milo and David Primo wrote a book about campaign finance reform and whether changing the rules would actually help people have more faith in our systems. What do you think? 800-642-1234. Would stricter campaign finance laws make a difference in how you view politics? If you see money and corruption in politics as a serious problem, what regulations do you think could help solve it? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Dave, you asked people about a variety of campaign finance reforms, from public funding of campaigns to limits on spending from corporations and unions. What did people think would do some good, and what are they less optimistic about?
Generally speaking, the American public is largely in support of disclosure if you frame the question as disclosure for others. They're less favorable toward disclosure, but still modestly favorable when it comes to disclosure for themselves. So it's, we want other people to disclose their contributions, but we'd like to keep our own contributions to ourselves. So that's sort of an inconsistency there. But disclosure tends to be fairly popular. What isn't particularly popular are restrictions on how much. Restrictions on how much, believe it or not, super PACs can give. Actually, a majority does not support restrictions on super PACs, which we found surprising, given how they're portrayed in the media. But they do support, for instance, spending limits on what corporations can spend on politics and even what candidates can spend on politics, which also surprised us because that has been all of those are not currently restricted. So I think that's sort of the big surprise there in our findings.
James on Facebook said we should strip all businesses and corporations, with the exception of the press, of their constitutional rights. Rights should belong only to people. Jeff, do you have a response for James when he's weighing in on this?
Well, that's his opinion. That's fair enough. The Supreme Court disagrees. And so we kind of deal in the world of what the laws are, what the changes in the laws have been, and what the effects of them are. So again, we're not in the business of advocating for or against things. But we love people who advocate, but we want them to be well-informed about how money in politics really works and what the likely effects of changes to laws would be. And just to piggyback off of what Dave said just a moment ago, the American public is, if you ask them directly about limits on campaign contributions and the like, they're generally favorable, but there's some hurt certain hot button words you can use to gin up more support in a survey. So if you frame things as limiting money, especially from corporations and especially to candidates in the other party, you'll get a lot more support. If you instead frame that question as limiting the ability of people to support like-minded candidates, you get much less support. And so a public opinion, while generally favorable of limits on money in politics, is actually pretty easy to manipulate through the survey frames.
Well, and Jeff, I heard you say, you know, you want an informed public, and I can't overlook the fact that chapters in your book are the uninformed public, the malleable public, the cynical public, the pragmatic public. I mean, what do you want to say about the actual information and knowledge of the public at large?
Well, one of the things we point to in the uninformed public is this is probably not very surprising. Campaign finance law is complex, but if you ask people kind of a quiz about campaign finance laws, they do no better than random guessing. So people really aren't very informed about what laws exist. And so if they were to express a preference for reform, they may actually be desiring something that already exists in practice. So people are pretty uninformed. But we shouldn't expect them to be well-informed. They got better things to do, for goodness sake. And so, you know, that's not a criticism of the public, but it's something we should be aware of when interpreting, public opinion. They say that's favorable toward reform. Basically, people don't know what they're talking about. And so, you know, hopefully folks can get more who are interested can read our book and get more informed about what the state of laws are and what their actual effects are in practice.
We're talking with Jeff Milo and Dave Primo right now, authors of the book Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters. And we're taking your calls. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. We continue this conversation ahead on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking with Dave Primo and Jeff Milo, authors of the new book, Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters. And we're taking your calls. We want to welcome Gwen from Madison now. Hi, Gwen.
Hello. Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi. What's on your mind as we talk about this?
Well, I think that trust in government could be restored if the campaign finance laws were changed to.
Oh, and we may have lost you, Gwen. Gwen was going to talk about trust in government would be more if the PACs were eliminated and if candidates could then have to directly appeal to constituents for money instead of having these major funders. Dave, is that something that you looked into in this book, and what did you find?
Well, I appreciate Gwen's question, and it plays into a problem we identify in the book, which is that the American public thinks that PACs and super PACs have this significant influence on campaign financing. But the reality is that super PACs are actually a very small proportion of overall spending. In fact, small donors who give under $200 now account for more fundraising from that candidates do than super PACs and PACs do. And so the idea that PACs and corporations are flooding the system with money. We hear a lot of these water terms in campaign finance, the tsunami of money, a flooding of money, just isn't borne out in reality. And this goes back to what Jeff was talking about earlier with regard to the importance of having accurate information, in part because of the way the media covers campaign finance. They'll often focus on super PACs and PACs and corporate giving, and that creates misperceptions, we would argue, in terms of how the public perceives the issue, and as a result, it may be skewing their preferences as a consequence. So, again, the fact is, when you ask the public, you know, what percentage of spending comes from super PACs, their answers are wildly inaccurate. And we would argue, again, that's why it's really important to have accurate information about the prevalence of this kind of funding in American politics.
Thanks for the call, Gwen. We appreciate it. Now we've got Richard in Wisconsin Dells. Hey, Richard.
Hello. I would like to ask the panel, well, since they think that campaign finance reform is not as big as it appears to be, what do they think about term limits and which one would have the greater impact in bringing back public trust? Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Jeff, what do you think? Have you explored term limits and how that plays into this conversation about campaign finance reform?
Well, it's a great question, and it's a great way to think, which is, you know, well, if the science says this isn't very effective, what about this other policy? And term limits, as you know, if we were to go back, even 30 years ago, really Republicans especially were pushing those as, again, the magic wand that would increase trust in government. We'd have more of a citizen legislature. And there's several books that have been written already on the topic. And I think the conventional wisdom among American political scientists would be that term limits have had some unintended negative consequences in terms of, having legislators that have maybe a little bit less expertise. But, we now have some states with term limits, some states without, and they're a little more popular in the states with them. And but it certainly hasn't been a cure-all. And I have, in other work, looked a little bit at the effects of term limits on trust in state government, and there's nothing big going on there. Hmm. So, and one of the things we argue in this book is that American cynicism and mistrust of government, as Dave put it before, it's very deep-seated and deep-rooted, and I might argue even healthy. But the idea that some reform is going to be a cure-all and dramatically change that turns out to be wishful thinking.
Jeff Milo and David Primo wrote a book about campaign finance reform, what people think and what might or might not reassure us when it comes to trust in government. You're listening to the Ideas Network. And now I want to welcome Dan from Madison. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yes. Terms like American cynicism and American mistrust in government, those are such broad brush statements. Those are you're referring to American consciousness on a grand scale, and your evidence that it doesn't work. It was brought out by saying that you guys have or you've done research on targeted areas in small or state level municipalities and things of that sort. How can you expect for something so broad to be affected when you're making changes on such a small scale? And how do you expect that to happen so quickly? We need generations reform and change in campaign finance and to take money out of politics in order for attitudes on a grand scale to change.
Yeah. Dan, thank you for that. I want to jump in here because I want to make sure our guests have an opportunity to respond. Dave, do you want to start?
Sure. I mean, I understand the caller's perspective, but what we did in the state level analysis was look at this is sort of state of the art social science where you look at a change in a law and think of it as an intervention and then observe what the effects are. And to be clear, a couple of things are really important to mention here. One, it wasn't us who necessarily came up with the hypothesis that campaign finance reforms would have a meaningful effect on trust in government. This is what reformers have been promising to Americans for decades now. They've been promising these big effects. We have several quotes in the book, and we could have filled a chapter with just quotations from politicians, reformers, scholars arguing this point. So it's really reformers who are making this point. The second reason why this matters is that the Supreme Court has said it matters. So the Supreme Court has said that one of the only two justifications for restrictions on political speech are, in this context, are to prevent corruption, of which we actually don't have as much actual corruption as people think in American democracy, but to prevent corruption or the appearance of democracy. So public perceptions are at the root of Supreme Court jurisprudence on campaign finance. So the studies we're doing, we would argue, are the most comprehensive that have been done on this question to date. And I sort of one last point, and then I'll let Jeff add his thoughts. Is right now we're having a lot of debate over a COVID-19 vaccine, and you see a lot of calls for a need for science and for transparency and for evidence about the effectiveness of the vaccine. We would argue that we need the same level of scrutiny on political reforms because they also have very significant consequences for our society, specifically for democracy.
Jeff, just a minute left here. What do you want people to know?
Well, you know, I think the bottom line here, you know, that there's not that much corruption, that money is not as big a driving force as many people think. This is really great news. This is a happy story about American democracy. And so I, you know, some people react to this very strongly and negatively, thinking, you know, we have to deny the science. It must be wrong. You know, sometimes science can bring about good news. And so for me, that's maybe the bottom line here.
A happy story about campaign finance. Don't hear that very often, Jeff. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Dave, we appreciate you joining us.
It was great to be back with you.
David Primo is a professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester, and Jeff Milo is a professor and chair of the economics department at the University of Missouri. They talked with us about their book, Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters.